And again, all of you have just a wonderful Independence weekend. We've still got another hour of open lines to go here before you go to bed or do whatever you're going to do. So we'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM. I still can't believe we're into July already. I mean, my gosh, it's just clicking too fast these days. Let's go to Litchfield, Kentucky. Paul, thanks for holding, Paul. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing
tonight? Okay, Paul, all is well. Thank you.
I want to jog your memory a second. I'm the young man that at age 16 went to Point Pleasant, West Virginia after the Mothman. Remember me?
I remember that.
Okay. Now, I grew up on a street that was haunted. It was absolutely haunted. My father told me that when they cut out the street, and it was called Wellington Avenue in Louisville, Kentucky, I lived there 44 years, that it was very deep cut, and the houses were high on each side of the hill. They went right through an Indian burial ground, and they just took those skeletons and all that archaeological stuff, and they just threw it in a dump truck and took it to wherever, a landfill.
Huh.
Now, the house that I lived in was extremely haunted. And I don't live in it anymore, but no family has stayed in it longer than 2 years.
And everybody reports the same thing, Paul?
Well, I haven't talked to any of them because I didn't want to frighten them, and I didn't want to tell them anything about it. But when we were young, at the age of camping out in the backyard, the alleys were not paved, and there would be a mist come up in the alleys, and we could see people walking in the mist. So like shadows.
Shadow people, yeah.
And we called them the fog people. Later on, WHAS started some late-night horror programs that ran to like 4 o'clock on Friday morning, and we started to get afraid. You have to learn to be afraid, and we weren't afraid.
Right.
And this house of mine was so spooky that I had a friend from high school. She was an excellent artist. She was hungry, and I said, hey, you know, like, I can jump on my motorcycle and, you know, be in a restaurant, get something to eat, and be back. And I'll be back in 15 minutes. When I came back, I found her all the way down the steps, which was a long way, with her feet right on the sidewalk. And I said, what are you doing down here looking like? She said, this place is haunted. And I said, no kidding. I said, no kidding. Yeah, it really is. And there were things that happened in that house that you wouldn't believe. You could see dark, kind of misty things float along the ceiling.
Is the house still there now?
Yes, it is.
I wonder if there are people in there, or because it's got to be. How old is it now?
Has moved in, and I hope they have good luck. I wish they would have a priest bless the place. And
did anybody ever get hurt in that house?
No, but I tell you what, when I was young, they made my life miserable because, you know, I was afraid. And when I got older, I got less afraid. And I just say, basically go to H, you know.
Would you go back there and live in that house?
Never again.
I don't blame you. Thanks for the call, Paul. Mike's in Los Angeles on the wild card line. Hello, Mike. Go ahead.
Good morning, George.
Good morning to you.
First-time caller, yes. I wanted to relate a story about my daughter who was born with the George syndrome, and it's a missing chromosome syndrome.
Ah, okay. And tell me, what is the symptoms of that?
The symptoms are severe heart defects, scoliosis, some mental retardation, delayedness, and it ranges, but most of the kids that get this don't live past 21.
Oh my God! And at what age did you realize, Mike, that she had this?
Well, she was born with it in the hospital. She never came home from when she was born. She was born full term and everything, but they got us in a round table and they told us that she had this and that she was going to require immediate heart surgery, and luckily, there was an intern who was interning up in San Francisco at the time working with these doctors during the 80s, early 80s, that were doing pioneering work in heart cardiology, doing surgery.
Sure.
And well, they were able to, you know, in the 12-hour surgery, put her together because nobody down here in L.A. could.
Oh my God, just a little tiny baby too.
Yeah,
wow.
it was quite. She's been through quite a lot, and she's very tough. She's come through a lot, but this last surgery that she had when she was about 13 years old was an open heart surgery, and we had a prayer session for her after because it was going to be rough because of all the scar tissue and the times that she had been opened up already. So when she was coming out of the surgery, it was a long one, and they had to cut her diaphragm and everything too to put an artificial tube through because she had no aortic arch at all. But anyway, when she was coming out of the surgery, she was curled up in a ball in the morphine, and she was completely out. And they stirred her a little and let her know that we were there. And she turned to my wife and very low, and she told her that she couldn't do it no more. That it was hurting too much. And at that very point, at that very moment, she straightened out like a board in the bed, and her eyes looked like her face looked like it lit up, and she looked straight up. And like there was nothing wrong with her, she started like kissing up into the air and shaking her head yes and no, like she was talking to somebody.
Huh.
This was on heavy morphine. And the doctors and one of the nurses even, you know, was crying a little. And the doctor was amazed. And my wife leaned over to her and asked her who she was talking to. And she said she was talking to her angel. And that her angel told her that she was going to be okay. And my dad had passed away a year before, and she was close to my dad. And she went and told my wife that my dad was there too. And then at like about a few seconds after that, it was like the lights went on, and she curled back up into a ball, and she never remembered anything about it after that.
They were watching her, though.
Oh my goodness! It was such a renewal of the afterlife and of the spiritual life for us that it was really.
And I've got to tell you, Mike, if people don't believe in the afterlife, when they hear stories like that, it's got to change their mind.
Oh, it was amazing. It's been amazing. She's had some other things, like we had a big gully in our backyard, and. And one day she came out of the shower, and it's way in the backyard down. We have about a quarter of an acre, and half of it is the yard, and the rest is down a hill.
Yeah.
And she came out of the shower one day at night, and she was sitting on the couch, and she started looking around her, and she started fidgeting. And my wife said, "What's wrong?" And she goes, the light, it's bothering me, the light." And then we were saying, my wife thought, you know, well, she's just, you know, something's wrong. And so she said, "Just don't pay attention." And as she was sitting, she started getting more and more agitated until she was almost crying. And at that very moment, somebody from my front yard calling me really loud, "Mike, Mike." And I opened the door, and he says, you're way, you know, the gully way in your backyard is on fire. There was 50-foot flames.
Oh, my gosh. And she sensed that.
She sensed it. And by that time, she was crying hysterically. And we just think maybe she was born wired a little differently or something because of her malady. And, you know, so she just never ceases to amaze us.
That is something. And by the way, you and your wife are saints because you have learned how to live with this and make it work for you, too.
Oh, yes. Well, we wouldn't have it any other way as far as, you know, the experiences that we've went through. There was one other thing I wanted to relate to you, though, about really fast, and it's some pictures that I took around February with my camera. I had aimed it up at the sun, and I took some pictures of the sun, right?
Okay.
And on one of the pictures that I took, okay, I noticed there was something there, so I put it on my computer, and I closed up on it, and very clearly in this daylight photograph, I have four orbs or spheres on the right side of the sun, like right in the atmosphere of the sun. You can see the halo hitting off the, you know, you can see the shadows and everything round, like they look like marbles in the atmosphere of the sun.
Well, it's now send that to us, but I've got to tell you, Michael, that could very well be, you know, light reflection. And, you know, from the sun, that happens a lot, but send it to me, and, we'll take a look at those pictures, and we'll get an answer back to you. Let's take a few more calls before the break. Fast night. We'll go to Shingletown, California. Roger's with us on Coast to Coast. Hello, Roger.
Hello, George. How are you doing?
Okay, not bad.
I'm calling about dreams. And, you know, one of the things that I think is really important to keep in mind about dreams is that
Where'd you go? I think I disconnected him by mistake, pushing my magical finger buttons. Oh, well.
Right.
There you are. Are you there? I'm having some technical issues here. I found him, and then I got rid of him again. Call us back. There's a line open for you. We'll get you right back on. We'll go to Jeff in Casper, California. Go ahead, Jeff. Welcome to the show.
Hi, George. How are you doing?
Great.
You know when this next solar eclipse is? The total solar eclipse on your favorite number, the 11th of July. And it's going to be visible in the South Pacific.
Okay.
So I wanted to suggest that maybe Art Bell could see it and maybe give us his call on what it looks like out there. And then do you know when the subsequent to that, do you know when the
I do not. When is it?
It's in 2012.
Uh-oh.
And this is really weird for me. It's on my birthday, November 13th of 2012.
What an ominous date, huh?
No doubt. And, you know, with all that has been discussed about 2012, to have it on one's birthday, a total solar eclipse, which will be visible, as I understand, no, that one will be visible in Australia. So we won't be able to see it here either, but it'll be happening. And, you know, Jim Berkland, with all the times that he's discussed that and seems to be actually quite right on the aspect of the new moon and the full moon, and, of course, that's when eclipses happen, that we could be in for some heavy-duty shaking.
Oh, absolutely. Now, what do you think is going to happen around 2012? What's your gut tell you?
Well, the direction that everything is going with this, I'm going to coin a word tonight so nobody can copyright this word because it's out there for everyone to use, ecotastrophe. The ecotastrophe that we've had down in the Gulf of Mexico is really, you know, disturbing, and it's in the direction of what has come out, everyone from Nostradamus to what's in the Bible to the direction that we are, you know, that it seems that it may be heading from the Mayan calendar ending at that time. And I really appreciate all that the Coast to Coast, everybody there has brought up about this.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, for
can't let it go.
Make our own determinations based on what guests say, and, you know, some of them aren't quite so impressed with it. I really do think that we're in for some significant changes, what with all the earthquakes that we're having constantly, and, you know, the tidal waves, the weather changes. I'm really concerned that it's going to be quite a ride, to say the least.
Well, we will find out soon enough, won't we? Let's go next to Houston, Texas. Ernest is with us. Hello, Ernest.
Hello, George.
Hey.
A bonus for you on that X-37B. They showed the rocket on the Houston Chronicle.
Yeah.
April 19, 2010, on the front page.
The mini shuttle, I call it.
Yeah, and they showed the rocket propulsion on it, and you can probably get it on the internet and pull it up.
Okay.
And that's a bonus.
All right, I'll do that. I got Richard C. Hoagland's coming on for a couple hours on Sunday. In one of the hours, we're going to talk about some of these space issues. So we shall do that. Winona, Minnesota. Earl, you have been on hold a long time.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing, Earl.
Hey, I just want to jump in quick. And I tried to call you that night that Jeffrey Smith was on about the GMOs.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys were having a debate about why the squirrels weren't eating the corn that wasn't organic. And I had an uncle when I was about 10 years old. He was actually an organic farmer. I didn't know it at the time. And he took me out in his field, and he cut off a stalk of corn, and he said, like, chew on this, you know, like, like look like a sugar cane, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I chewed on it, and it was sweet. It was just wonderful. You know, it was just like, you know, I was thinking, it was like, wow, this must be like what sugar cane is. And we walked across the field, or across the road to his neighbor, and he said, he cut off a stalk of his corn. He says, now chew on that. And I chewed on that corn stalk, and it was horrible tasting. It didn't taste like food at all.
What was it? Was it? You didn't have GMOs then, did you?
Well, no, well, they oh sure, they've had GMOs for years. But the thing of it was the difference between organic farming and just regular farming.
Even the difference, you could taste that difference.
Oh, it was just day and night. It was like eating candy and you know sucking on a soap bottle or something. It was just the taste was so. And then this guy across the road had borrowed corn from him, and then in the fall he brought it back. And you know when they're in the fall, they've got corn, don't have enough storage. They'll put a snow fence up out in the driveway or the yard or whatever.
Right.
And he had dumped his corn in, and the neighbor had dumped his corn in there, and then the hogs got out, and you could see where they ate a line right around, you know, in the snow fence. They wouldn't touch that guy's corn.
They knew.
And they ate all my uncle's corn. But just the difference in the flavor was just horrendous. It was just the difference. It was just day and night. So I could see why those animals wouldn't want to eat that unless they absolutely had to.
And you can imagine then with the GMO, what it would be like compared to organic.
Oh yeah. Oh, nice. Absolutely. Anyway, I just thought you know, there's a little more information for you. I wish he was alive. He passed away a few years ago. But
sounds like he was a good farmer.
Yeah, well, he was. But the thing now, when he passed away at his funeral, I was talking to him, and some people thought he was a nut for farming the way he did. Even back then, isn't that interesting? That people thought, you know, here he is. He doesn't use sprays. He's out there cultivating.
Yeah, what's wrong with the guy, right?
Yeah, what's wrong with him? Exactly. So it was kind of funny, but just wanted to share that with you.
Great. Thanks, Earl. Let's go to BJ in Colorado Springs, west of the Rockies. Hey, BJ, what's up?
Hello. Well, we have some strange activity going on up here.
What's happening?
Well, we do have Fort Carson, you know.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Anyway, we've been having, in rows of two, four rows, so we had a total of 8 helicopters going over our property way out in the country. Nothing but prairie out here. And I'm ringed by mountains, foothills. And then the mountains on one side. So we're kind of secluded, but these helicopters are going over, and they're not just the little ones. They're those great big ones with, they don't call them propellers, but whatever they are, one on the front, one on the back. There's the great big ones. There's a word for them. Are they called Hueys? They carry the Jeeps and trucks and stuff. There's those great big ones. I've got pictures of them.
Where are they going?
I don't know. They come from my south. They curve around to my property. They go. They're headed north, and they curve and go west, and just keep going. Now they went over the town of Florence because my mother lives there, and she said she heard them go over and looked out, and she asked me what's going on. I said I don't know, but I have pictures of them, and I could send them. I don't know what you could do with them.
Yeah, send them. I mean, some of the big helicopters is. You know, they're all kinds, but I'd like to see what this looks like, you know, and get it right to us, if you would. We're going to have more open lines in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And if you need to reach me, of course, just send it, george@coasttocoastam.com. Pictures I'll look at, and we'll send to Lex, and then he looks at them, and some of them make our feature story or even our photo section of the day. We'll be right back. Going to Detroit in August for a bit. Celebrate with my parents their 61st wedding anniversary. Isn't that something? I don't think that happens anymore. 61 years. Let's come right back and take final open line calls on Coast to Coast AM. Bob in Omaha sends a text and says, okay, what are your feelings about rumors that President Obama and some BP officials sold off stock a week before the Gulf spill? Well, some of the BP officials did sell off stock before the spill. Could have been just one of those things. As far as the president's holdings were concerned, I believe he owns some mutual funds, and these funds invest in various industries. I have mutual funds, and I think they're in a broad range of things. They're in the financial sector. They're in the energy sector. They're in that. So that's not unusual that they buy and sell. I don't see anything sinister about the spill. It was a horrible accident that they probably knew about. There were signs there, and they did nothing about it. They just continued pumping oil out of it until the thing blew up and exploded. Let's go to Lake Charles, Louisiana. There we go, east of the Rockies. Hey, Joe, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I had a question. You had a guest on a couple nights ago. I work at a casino. I get off late at night, and I can generally only catch, like, the last hour of the show, unfortunately.
Okay.
But he was apparently a linguist, and he has some different views than, say, Zechariah Sitchin on the whole.
Oh, Ananias. Sure. That was Mike Heiser, and then there was another one named Jonathan Gray a few weeks before that.
Okay, well, quick question. Like I said, I didn't catch, like, what his views were. Does he have some sort of a website or something that I could go to look up what his views or what his take was?
It's Michael S. Heiser, HEISER.com. MichaelSHeiser.com.
Okay, and I know that his views, like I said, differ greatly from Zechariah Sitchin's.
Yeah,
I think he
does not believe that we were genetically altered by extraterrestrials. He believes in UFOs. He believes in ETs, but he just doesn't believe in that Sumerian story that Zechariah Sitchin has interpreted.
Ah, okay. Well, then I guess one more quick question, and I'll let you go. Is there anybody else besides Zechariah Sitchin who purports the same or similar view as he does that's doing any serious research on this that you could possibly give me to look at as far as, like, some research ideas?
No, there's nobody out there, Joe, that has done the kind of work that Sitchin has done.
Well, yeah.
Those who have interpreted the Sumerian texts don't agree with Sitchin, but in terms of those who do agree, I mean, there are some ufologists out there who agree with what he's doing, but he is by far the most comprehensive in terms of research.
Yes.
And he's in the hospital right now. He was supposed to be my guest Sunday night, and he's 90 years old.
Right.
Okay?
All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Joe. Next up, let's go to Jimmy in St. Louis on the wildcard line. Hey, Jimmy, welcome to the show.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Okay, thank you.
I have a question. I'm kind of on my own turf. I keep seeing visions of my own death.
Oh, my.
I am a Iraqi veteran from the 2003 beginning of the Iraqi war. I've gone through many phases of pills and anxiety medication, everything else, and I can go to work, I can do this, and I still see things of me dying.
How do you see yourself dying, Jimmy?
It's not even Iraq anymore. It's upon the streets of St. Louis. It's upon driving to work every day. It's upon looking at the news. It's very critical. It's insane.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, hailing from St. Louis, you got to be careful. There are some areas there that you don't want to go into. And, you know, maybe you're getting some of these premonitions about that. Are you in law enforcement now or anything like that?
I am not in law enforcement. I do something that has nothing to do with law enforcement. I work on the east side.
That's a tough.
I am from the west side.
Okay, the east side's a tough area, as you know.
Yes, it is.
You know what? You may be just getting impressions and premonitions. I would just watch my backside if I were you. You never know.
Do you ever see visions, or have you had callers see visions of things that don't have anything to do with war phases or this and that? It's very strange.
Has this happened to you all your life, these visions?
Never.
First time.
Never till after I came home.
And are you seeing other visions or just this particular one?
I am seeing many visions of my family, myself, mostly myself, and it's always a dangerous situation. It's always a horrible situation, and it's driven me to many doctors, to many medicines, to many treatments, and it never seems to come to a conclusion.
What do the doctors say, Jimmy?
The doctors prescribe medicine.
Yeah, that's the simple thing for them, right? They just
take
these pills and off you go.
And the medicine is a short-term release.
Do you have computer access?
Yes, sir.
If you would just go to GulfWarVets.com.
I've gone through all of it, post-traumatic stress. I've looked at all of it, and there is no cure. I've been to groups, and they do not know or understand what I'm saying. They look at me like a lunatic.
I want you to deal with a Joyce Riley. She's a nurse. And you'll get her on that website, and she will be very accessible to you. GulfWarVets.com.
Joyce Riley, and where is she from?
She's in Missouri, actually.
Okay.
And
okay.
You know what, Jimmy? She's the best. She will understand what you're going through better than anybody.
And I love your show, and I listen to it all the time.
Well, thanks for serving, by the way.
Oh, and that's no problem. But there is something, there's a void in my life since I've been there. I was at the 101st Airborne there, and it's been very confusing since I've come home.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's not because of normal things. I've talked to many veterans, and I see illusions. It's very strange.
Are other veterans going through this, or are you alone on this?
I have not talked to anybody that has seen premonitions of their own death or their family's problems or their family's death.
All right, well, do two things for me. Get a hold of Joyce Riley. One, tell her you listen to Coast to Coast. That, you know, will get you in the door a little quicker with her. And the other thing is just be careful. You know, if you're getting impressions and intuitive feelings, make sure nothing happens to you. So just, you know, be extra cautious. Especially when you're out there on the east side, for crying out loud.
Oh, well, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. Man, I've never felt threatened. It's just, it's an own anxiety to myself.
I understand. It would to
very
me.
Different.
Okay, Jimmy, do that. Do those two things. Let's go to Benton Harbor, Michigan. Larry, welcome to the show, Larry.
Oh, good evening. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hey, I was just listening to that gentleman that called in. He said he had, like, demonic voices he heard on his cell phone.
Yes.
Yeah, my wife and I both experienced that twice on different occasions. She had called me, and when I I said, hello, and then all of a sudden we would hear very heavy, deep breathing, raspy like a demonic.
Well, you know, I wonder if they could be like pranksters. I mean, that's another possibility. There's people out there making random phone calls to cell phones across the country, and you know, they're pranking people all the time. Larry, let me ask you this: do you look at, is there caller ID on these numbers or anything, or no numbers at all?
No, my wife would call me. She called me on my phone, and it rang, and I looked on the caller ID, and it said...
It was her.
My wife, yeah. So I said, hello, how are you? And then all of a sudden, just this deep, heavy breathing, raspy, demonic-type breathing.
And I don't think your wife has that kind of demonic voice, right?
No.
No.
Not at all, not at all.
That is weird. I don't know where that's coming from. I really don't. This first time I'm beginning to hear this. Couple more text messages in, one from Mark in Panama City, Florida. Do you think I need to make a relocation plan because of the methane gases in the Gulf? Good question. Make the plan? Absolutely. Everybody needs a plan. Evacuate and escape today? I wouldn't, but you should make the plan. And then Carla from Atlanta, Georgia, she wants to know thoughts on if it's possible for major earthquakes or sinkholes due to the massive amounts of oil coming out. Yes, I believe that's true. When you take something out, you're creating a problem. Let's go next to Dwight in Venice, Louisiana, first-time caller. We'll squeeze you in here, Dwight. Go ahead.
How are you, George, from the rolled-up streets of a sleepy Venice? this is yeah. the hearts, as it were, of the response to this thing. Do hazmat work, and my job is to monitor people and make sure they work safely. There is a tremendous lot of bureaucracy in this. I wanted to corroborate something that I heard on your show within the last couple of days.
Okay.
And that is this, that, well, this is my corroboration. In speaking with a gentleman who took the BBC and apparently some people from Discovery Channel on their last visit to what is called the exclusion zone, the conversation on that craft was basically, according to this gentleman, that the BBC believes that there are four leaks total, the one that is shown all the time, another one nearby at the ocean floor. Their contention is there's another one 300 feet or so down below the sea floor where the Halliburton concrete, everything blew out there. And then they do also buy into that there's some kind of a massive rupture due to the fact that they overextended and went down way beyond what they were permitted for. Now, that was a conversation on the boat in the exclusion zone. Along with that, the gentleman is saying he took a surface video as they were taking their expensive video down below. They had the similar stuff to what BP has, and they were looking, and they saw hectares of oil, just a dead zone all out there, which by now is understandable. But this guy took a surface video. He said he saw a whale on a Coast Guard barge being carted off, and well, I don't know vegetation. He says he saw floating sea cucumbers, which is more emblematic of the, I guess, this massive dead zone that's going on out there. And to get to the gist of my call, you may be aware that they've claimed some kind of strange 65-foot zone. They don't want anybody coming in and.
Right.
40,000. Well, a lot of people think $40,000 fine. A lot of people think that has to do with on the beach. That's more involved with the exclusion zone. And curiously, that fine and intimidation was announced within an hour of this BBC tour.
Well, I've got to tell you, this is going to be a problem of biblical proportions. We have been saying this since it happened in April, and it's going to look. No matter what's been going on, have yourself, if you can, a nice weekend. Ian Punnett tomorrow night. I'll be on Sunday. We've got a live program for you Monday night as well. Regardless of everything, remember one thing. Happy birthday, America. For Dan Galante, Jason King, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there. On Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, have a great Independence weekend, everyone.